This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 291, Coffee Code. Hello and welcome to this edition of GamesAtWork.biz. It's not just any edition, it is this one because you're listening to it right now, whenever right now is for you. This is Michael Martin speaking, one of the founders and co-hosts of said podcast that we just referred to a moment ago, and I'll refer you back to my previous comments on that. I'd love to say a big welcome and hello, whatever, to my friend and co-host and founder and just all-around cool guy, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Howdy-ho.
Howdy-ho. Yeah, we are getting to that time of year, aren't we?
We're getting close to Mr. Hanke. Matter of fact, I might have had to visit with him earlier. In my life, you don't know when. I mean, this is not, don't need that much information in my life. But yeah, it's a wonderful day here at GamesAtWork.biz headquarters, which is a split headquarters.
Yes,
but it's all one headquarters because it's in the ether, in the net. It's in the metaverse.
Remember when we used to have a metaverse recording studio?
Yes, we did, and I do. Matter of fact, last weekend, I actually went in world for the first time in months, just to see how far back I was on software updates for the browser, which is a ways back, and just to see what has changed. And you know, all my favorite haunts are gone.
Mm.
The really incredible Babylon 5 build that used to be out there
is gone.
I still get once a day cards from Something Lemon, which was one of the shops that made clothing.
Lululemon?
So that person is still out there, not Lululemon, it was Something Lemon, but that person is still out there making content in world.
Wow.
The big thing, and I think Ian posted something about this a while back, the big thing is changing your avatar's shape using a mesh now.
Oh yeah, yes.
Really high quality meshes. And I still have, I think, like $14,000 Linden dollars. And it's like, I can't afford any meshes. So it's just like, okay, yes, it exists. I'll walk around in my, you know, 10-year-old mesh or non-mesh prim-based avatar.
Yeah, but now it's retro. There's probably going to be retro shops that are non-mesh based, and you probably could sell your stuff there and, you know, make some money.
Sell my soul to the company.
Make some
store.
Linden dollars. Lots of Linden dollars.
Lots of Lindens.
Hey, we have
anyway,
got a show and a half here.
We do have a show.
For everybody. And we're going to start off with a topic that is near to dear to both of our hearts, isn't it, Michael?
Very.
Yeah.
Very.
So we're going to start off with coffee.
Coffee.
Not dogs. Not coffee talk, but coffee. And this Gizmodo article caught both of our eyes as we were trolling the interwebs for things that are important to talk about here. And in this case, we have an internet-connected coffee maker that has been hacked and been hacked with ransomware. So when you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, I need my coffee. And you turn it on and it says, here, go to this link and pay me money or you get no coffee. In this COVID world, that's a bad thing, isn't it, Michael?
Yeah, well, what's really cool about this is actually, it's a proof of concept that a security researcher did.
Yeah.
And I actually went to his article, which was really long and detailed and talked about how he reverse engineered the protocol, the communications, what chipset it was, et cetera, in order to figure out the actual bootloader and the alternate bootloader that allowed you then to load the updated firmware. All of this with no validation, no encryption, no security.
No nothing, really.
Yeah. And then the fact that the coffee maker said, hey, you know, this isn't a problem. That's an old coffee maker we don't make anymore or support. Now, I have a 20-year-old coffee maker. I have another one that's 10 years old. And I think through this of the whole idea that an IoT device could get out of support in like 3 years, when the age of connected devices are designed to last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or more, tells you that the problem isn't the fact that this one make and model of a connected device can be reverse engineered and then hacked, but the fact that it is so easy to do, and we consider these devices as throwaway devices, effectively. You know, 3-4 years and it's out of support and we'll never have a software update again to fix these problems. And there are, you know, probably hundreds of thousands, if not more, of these make, model, and devices sitting out there.
Yep.
That's the real story behind this.
Well, and we've had that exact conversation a couple times here on the show for our long-term listeners, that these are problems and they do need attention. And when you think about the nature of devices like this or appliances like this, they really shouldn't be disposable. At least that's my perspective. And I know it's yours too, Michael, right? They should last for longer. And because of that, they now need the software to last for longer with patches and updates because exploits and others show up.
And the bigger, absolutely agree on all the points. And one of the bigger challenges is, and we've talked about this many times, on the difference between security and convenience, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so the convenience of this device and other devices in the same family is that the setup is so easy. You just pull out an app, you turn on the device, it creates its own network access point that you connect to with your phone unsecurely, and then that sets up the handshake to then give it permission to get to your network, right?
Right.
So there's a architectural or a basic design feature to try to make things simple and easy to set up. And I have some devices in the house that use the same technique, I won't say protocol, of, you know, connect to this access point that the device itself is going to broadcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a, I can't remember the name of the brand right now, but it's a large battery, right? It's designed for camping or trips and stuff, so you can charge phones, et cetera, or run small appliances with, and it's designed to run for like 24 hours. I mean, it's a pretty big, beefy battery.
Yeah.
Probably about the size of a 27-inch monitor. Not quite cubed, but heavy, you know, etc. And the initial setup and configuration is the same thing, except you have to press a physical button on the device to turn on the access point.
Mm-hmm.
You connect to it with your phone. You do the handshaking. You give it access to your network. And then that times out, and the only way to turn it back on is to, once again, press a physical button on the device. The concern here was, yes, you can connect only if you're physically co-located to the device, but they never shut off the access point.
Right.
So anything that gets onto your home network could then connect to this device. And it becomes a vector, an attack vector, to allow for dropping payloads onto the device and then using it to connect up to your network and drop the payload onto your network. That's the scarier thing for me. And yeah, it's more than just you can't get to your coffee. I mean, they kept turned on the hot plate, started
squirting
pouring water out.
Yep.
So basically running a brew cycle with none of the physical components in that must be in there for you to run the brew cycle. So they actually had the ability for software overrides of mechanical features to keep it as a safe item.
Very exactly. And to destroy it as well, because if you try to run a pump with no water passing through it, you can destroy the pump. So you could actually, you know, shades of centrifuges, take care of things like that. You know, staying on devices in your home, we have an article here that was really intriguing about what Toyota's doing for robots to help people navigate their home and to do things where the people in the home may not have the ability to anymore because of injury or illness or just age too, right? And this is an intriguing reimagined solution because we think about helper robots, you know, zipping around on the floor and reaching up for counters and fridges and stuff like that. Michael, this one is a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, this is actually really, really cool. And it's from the Toyota Research Institute out in Silicon Valley. Matter of fact, I had an opportunity to try to work with them years ago. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, which is a bummer, but really cool organization.
Oh, yeah.
Doing just awesome technological proof of concepts. And this robot is not a commercial robot. It's not, they have not talked about making it available commercially, et cetera. But it's actually funny. I'm looking at the picture, and it really looks like somebody. Did you ever hang off a monkey bars upside down and try to do things with your hands?
Absolutely. I love doing that.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Super fun.
And it's on a I want to say a scaffolding in the ceiling of a kitchen, and it has hands that use inflatable bags in order to grasp things that might be breakable, and it's designed to basically wash dishes, load dishwashers, and do kitchen menial activities to help people out. What's really cool, though, is with this, there's a half-hour video that goes with this article that talks you through kind of reimagining the house of the future in robotics that goes beyond just this one robot. And do you remember the... I can't remember the name of the device, but we talked about, and I know I played with one of these. I think you played with one of these too. The device was basically a Segway with an iPad attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
That was a remote presence device.
Exactly, right, yep.
So the half-hour video is actually hosted by one of the researchers in their imagining of what that remote presence device would look like. And it's much more human size. And the body of it is a huge, slightly curved screen that is the whole length of the device, so you can see the full body presence of the person on the other end. So it's like a person standing there in a portable, rounded screen, scrolling through the research center, taking you through what they have there, what's going on, and it's kind of cool. It's very slimming. and the video that they posted is actually a 360 video. So if you have some VR glasses or you have the controls in YouTube, you can scan around, look around, and experience the whole lab that they have. Very, very cool. Very cool.
Neat. Well, let's move from one robot that's hanging from the ceiling upside down. Or right side up. Maybe we're upside down to it. I don't know.
Well, if we're all in outer space, which we kind of are at all times because the Earth is in space, what direction is up?
Well, it's where you look up and see the sky, you look down and see the ground, as the song goes.
Depends.
As the song goes.
I wonder if that's a really famous song on a huge set of albums.
Anyway, it must be. So let's talk about drones. And we won't drone on about this one.
We're going to keep droning on about this subject.
Yeah, see, look at that. Both of us. Same joke, you know. tune in again tomorrow. You'll hear more. This particular one is taking advantage of a rather large drone, but not super large, to go and clean stadia. In between events. So stadiums are now beginning to open up again, depending on which state you're in the United States or which country you're in around the world. Limited seating is being made available for people to go to sporting events, still socially distant, and there's a need to keep things sanitized and disinfected. So we now have disinfecting drones done by Lucid. And we talked about Lucid before, didn't we? I think we did.
And it's D1 disinfecting drones. Say that three times fast.
Yeah, well, once you get past the alliteration, you're just nutso. Wasn't Lucid the company that did the window washing drones?
I believe it is.
Yeah.
I believe it is.
Huh. So it's an interesting thing because you have to wonder how much disinfecting fluid could said drone carry. And might they have the appropriate cameras and sensors to know that this seat was sat in and that seat wasn't, so that you can deposit just the right amount of disinfectant to disinfect without wasting?
Well, the interesting thing is they're talking about the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, mm-hmm. which is the home of Atlanta United Football Club and some other team that plays some weird-shaped ball game. I think it's the Falcons? I don't know. Anyway, and my, I haven't had a chance to do the tour there. My brother has mm-hmm. of that stadium. That stadium is technologically advanced.
Very connected. Advanced. Yeah.
All 5G. So knowing where people sit, trivial exercise. They have data points on all that. That's how they can track all the fans and bring the food to you. Right? Mm-hmm. So using this makes a lot of sense because you can reduce waste. But given the fact that the aerosolization of expectorant from people while they're cheering at a game, you probably have to know the direction of people's face, which is probably towards the field, unless they're screaming at the guy behind them.
Which does happen.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. But it really allows for some precision cleaning or disinfecting. I think this is really neat. I was watching, I think it was a Bayern München game recently, and I can't remember where they were playing, but they had supposedly social distanced about a third of the people in the stadium, right?
Yeah.
They allowed it, but it wasn't home. I think they were playing in somewhere, I want to say it was in Hungary, but I'm not positive where the game was. And yes, you might sell those seats, but people want to get close to the field, or they want to get to where they want to go. And even with that, people were clustered and clumped. So I do find it interesting that this will hopefully mean at least the next person who comes in and sits there is not going to have the undisinfected seat from the previous person who was there. Very cool.
Yeah, very cool indeed. So we'll see. So let's stay on the subject for a moment of COVID, which, you know, is on the minds of a lot of people. And Michael, you found this interesting link, which appears to have UK statistics.
Yeah, so I belong to a public Slack on iOS development. Mm-hmm. And one of the developers there released an app that they wrote as open source, free on GitHub, called UK COVID-19 Statistics. They had started writing it and then realized that due to the iOS App Store policy that only official government sources could create these types of applications,
right,
it wasn't going to get in the store. And so since they had written it with all Swift UI and modern Swift-based architecture, etc., they just published the source code on GitHub. I took a look at it, and I actually pinged the guy on Slack. I said, hey, really cool. Thank you for posting this. I'm working on an app right now and having a couple of mental blocks on a couple of issues, and his mm-hmm. source code was clean and clear and helpful. And he's like, yeah, it's the first thing he's ever published this way. And he was actually worried about publishing his code, because it's like throwing your code out there and having people criticize it.
Yeah,
well, and I'm like, yeah, but you know, it's really cool you did it, and thank you. So it's a really neat little app. It basically goes to the local UK-based statistics and will pull it up in the app. You can choose between different countries in the United Kingdom, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, etc., and get a 1 week through an all-time case curve, death curve, etc. It also has widgets because mm-hmm. it was modern, written for iOS 14.
Yep.
And all the source code is there. So if you want to learn a little bit about iOS 14 or about Swift UI, it's a good set of example code to look at, and you can compile it and put it on your own device. So...
super cool. Well, I'm going to sign up to watch this code too, because, you know, even if it can't be used in its current form, the fact that it's set up for the widgets, that it's set up in the way that it is, you could imagine how it might be used for, oh, I don't know, someone who might want to track how much time they're wasting in certain meetings and just kind of, you know, exhibit stuff like that. You know,
well, the good news is that already exists.
Oh,
in
oh.
Swift UI for iOS 14.
But with such nice charts with and widgets. Graphs?
With widgets.
With such nice charts and graphs, though?
I don't want to put no graphs in it.
Come on.
Matter of fact, it's available on tvOS even.
Love it. So creative uses of technology that have been inspired through COVID. One of the things that I saw, and I'm not sure why I'm seeing as many of these fashion things these days, but I am. So there you go.
Because you're stylish.
It is my style. It is, the things that I do. There's a intriguing set of things that are happening in fashion right now where people aren't going out to work. They're not going out to shows or parties or discos or those sorts of things.
Sweatpants fashion is huge.
But fashion is still there and still impacting the way people look and see things. And Moschino had an idea, and this implementation I thought was super cool, working with the folks from Jim Henson in their creative environment too, to create puppets. So small scale versions of the fashions that these fashion designers are creating, and having a fashion show using the puppets and a runway and filming all of it. And gosh, you know, how cool was this to show not just the models, but the audience members, and, you know, doing a little model of the fashion critics of the world. I thought this was super deluxe clever.
I thought the little black dress that Oscar the Grouch was wearing was just perfect. Elmo, on the other hand, you know, you need to watch that hemline.
Okay, I don't know what you're watching in your spare time, but these were really good fashions, and what can I tell
you? Yeah, no, this was an interesting article. I'm not a big fashion person, obviously. I do a podcast, and it's got no video.
For a reason.
There might be a reason.
For a reason we might add, yes.
But yeah, it was interesting. And like you said, just the creativity to try to express the work that you have done in another consumable way for people to experience. I mean, most of us, I would say all of the listeners of this podcast, are probably not invited to Fashion Week very often.
Yeah, no. Whether it's in
not
New York
very
or
often.
Milan.
Yeah, yeah. So this one would be a great way to experience it, sort of. very cool. Interesting yeah. article.
I liked it. And when we think about it related to the virtual reality or augmented reality versions of fashion, this is a very, you know, personal, handcrafted experience. So super cool stuff. So we've talked about various software things. Let's talk about hardware for a minute or two, because Google had an announcement, which feels like ages ago, but as Michael, you pointed out, it was Wednesday on September 30th, with a number of intriguing things, not the least of which to me is the focus on the Nest brand and bringing out more elements from Nest and keeping that brand very much in the forefront. What was your take?
Yeah, it was interesting because I know listeners to the show know that you and I are a bit more Apple-centric with our personal hardware. But, you know, the Google Pixel phone has always been interesting to me because it is kind of the gold standard of Android devices, right? Mm-hmm. It is the reference design, if you will, of having an Android device. And the couple of times I thought about getting an Android phone, it would obviously be the Pixel, just for that reason. So I had heard nothing, and then I was like, oh yeah, that's this week. And then it was like, oh, what did they talk about? So the Pixel 5 and a 5G Pixel 4a, which is kind of weird. Google TV, the UI looks so much like tvOS, the latest tvOS.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
I mean, the whole
little bubble
design
in the top
bubbling on the top, and the. And I've got to ask a question: do you like horizontal scroll lists?
Not particularly.
I can't stand them.
Because I don't know when they end.
You have no sense of how much stuff there is to go through. And that evidently is the way when it comes to TV OSs and new websites. And we see that with Google TV, the new Chromecast device, right? And the whole Nest Audio stuff. I know you have a HomePod, don't you?
I do.
Do you still use it?
Yes, I do. And you know how I use it?
You say, hey, Dingus, play me some music?
Well, gosh, I could do that, but I don't. The way that I use it, and this is a really cool COVID story here for you, too, is that in our attempts to be very socially distant and be outside while still having a little bit of some social interaction, especially for my kids, and we're going to do this tonight, is we have an outdoor screen, which is really an indoor screen. We're using outdoors. We have a projector. We have an Apple TV. And we have a HomePod. So because our wireless network extends to the patio outside, we can set all that up. We can run the Apple TV through the projector. We can then have the audio from the HomePod. And you know what? While it's not like booming outdoor, full drive-in theater movie experience, it's actually not that far off from those of you who remember what great sound quality you used to get from a drive-in movie theater experience.
That little tiny speaker that you would put
hang
on your
window. Actually, it's quite good. It's quite good. And I have been considering getting a second one so that we would have the full stereophonic effects.
You know, you could get four speakers and go for quadrophonic.
Ooh.
But do you have the Moonrock needle? It's okay for a car stereo, but I wouldn't want it in my house.
I was actually thinking of the water version where I could be hydromatic, but let's not go there. Oh, man, too many good things that we need to talk about. We have only moments left, Michael. Is there something really particular you want to make sure we touch?
Well, in our never-ending story around Flight Simulator, I figured we'd jump to that real quick. Found another great article in this case.
About the hole.
It's a sinkhole that was discovered. So we've had the huge tower. Now we have a sinkhole. But actually, what's really interesting about this post, and it on Kotaku, I can never pronounce the website. There's a half hour, not quite half hour video with it, taking you through the whole flight experience.
Oh my gosh! And I didn't see that video.
Yeah, how much they've actually improved and made flying that much more realistic in Flight Simulator. And, checking, how do you do VR flight versus based off the GPS, et cetera. And it's a really, really good video by, I don't know the guy.
Reversed Window is the, no, that's the...
Kairala is the guy who
Larry
the video
Kairala
together.
Yes,
yeah. I really enjoyed that. It was really cool.
Wow.
And if you want to get the experience and you haven't picked up Flight Simulator yet, then you might want to watch that video. Just get experience of the flight experience.
So Michael, experience jump me to the end experience. Do you come out in China?
No.
Okay. Is there a black hole in the center of the earth you get to?
No.
There are some scientists that think that right now.
Okay. Is it a little tiny one or a big one?
I don't know. I just...
Well, if it's a big one, we've already entered the event horizon and we're all dead anyway.
What are you going to do? Man. So why don't we end on a musical note here? Because yes. It is something that I thought, wow, this is pretty fun. Rolling Stone periodically does, the best of... And one of the best ofs that they've done here very recently is the best 500, yes, you heard me right, 500 albums. And I did not make it very far through this list, but I found a few of them that are in the 500 to 451 kind of space, kind of cool. And Michael, you made it maybe a little further than I did as you were going up and down the list. Would you agree that the number one album of all time, according to Rolling Stone magazine, is in fact, and here I am scrolling down to
scrolling,
is Marvin Gaye's What's Going On?
No, I would not agree.
What would you say is your number one album of all time?
I don't know yet, because I haven't listened to them all. no, that's a good album. It's personally not my favorite of all time. I don't know what my favorite of all time is, but it's a classic album.
Oh, it's classic. I love it.
Which, you know, if it comes to classic literature or classic movies, usually means long, boring, and depressing. Like War and Peace. A Tale of Two Cities.
I would have to do a further scanning going on through here. I've been listening recently to a lot of punk, a lot of ska. Prince has had a good set of rotations in with my listening here recently too. So
what's your favorite punk album you're listening to right now?
Here's the thing. I don't listen to albums. I'm listening to songs. You know,
I'm an album guy.
So, you know, Ballroom Blitz, you know, is a good way to kind of get things moving when you need to get things
Which
moving.
Version of Ballroom Blitz?
Oh, well, now we could talk about that for ages, but look at the time. We got to go.
Yes.
So, thanks everyone for listening. If you've got a version of Ballroom Blitz that you think is more fantastic than the others, tell us. We'd love to hear about it. And Michael, where could they tell us
they
about
could tell
their
us
favorite songs?
On yours and my favorite social media site, Facebook, at our gamesatwork.biz Facebook page.
Our other Twitter? Favorite? Yes, there we go. That would be my favorite.
Or how about over at our website at gamesatwork.biz.
Biz. All right, see ya. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.